the Phoenix Stones to wake it, I say, trying not to let the group get sidetracked.
And the pendants?
Six says, then tilts her head as something occurs to her.
Maybe that's why Cetricus Rock keeps them. They could be more than trophies to him.
We went through our chests back in Chicago,
Nine groans, probably remembering how bored he was cataloging our inheritance.
I've got more rocks and shit than I know what to do with.
We should bring it all,
Marina says, certainty in her voice.
Our inheritances? Our pendants? Bring it to the sanctuary and commit it to the earth, like Malcolm said.
Malcolm nods. I know it's vague, but it's something. It could be the advantage we're looking for, I say, thinking it over. Hell, it could be what we were sent here to do in the first place. Nine crosses his arms, looking skeptical.
Yesterday, I was staring at the biggest goddamn Mogadorian ship I've ever seen. Burying our stuff in some dusty-ass temple might have been a cool idea like months ago, but we're this close to full-on war, and I'm pretty sure we've got some bad guys to kill.
Before I can reply, Malcolm steps forward.
The sanctuary might be our best hope, he says, but it's best not to put all our eggs in one basket.
Nine's sort of right. As much as I hate the idea of splitting up again, Six says, some of us should stick with Walker's plan to take the fight to the Moogs and their people.
Nine pumps a fist.
This guy!
And some of us should head to Mexico, I say, finishing Six's thought.
I want to go, Marina says immediately. I want to see this sanctuary. If it's a place for Lorik, a place where we lived, maybe that's where we should bury Eight's body.
I nod and look over at Six, waiting for her decision.
Well?
New York? Or Mexico?
Mexico, she says after a moment. You're better at dealing with these government types than I am. And if we need a Lorik representative at the UN, you're the obvious choice. Thanks.
I think.
She's saying that because you're such a Boy Scout,
Nine adds in a loud whisper. I glance over at Sam, who seems like he's about to speak, his mouth half open. He's cut off by Six, who subtly shakes her head at him.
I'll stay here too, I guess,
Sam says after an awkward moment, sounding more than a little deflated. He forces a smile for me.
Someone has to keep you and Nine in line.
That leaves only Adam. Our Mogadorian ally has maintained a respectful silence this whole time, probably trying not to step on any toes as the secrets of our race are revealed. When I turn to him, he's still gazing at the screen. He looks lost in memory, maybe remembering Dr. Anu and his machine. He frowns when he notices the rest of us watching him.
They'll be waiting for you in Mexico,
Adam says.
If there's a source of Lorik power there, you know my people have spent the last few years trying to access it.
Only the guard can get in, though, right?
Sam asks, looking from Adam to his dad.
It's what I said,
Malcolm replies, lips pursed in uncertainty.
Just like only we can have legacies,
Nine replies, eyeballing Adam.
You're saying this could be another trap, Moog?
It's not a trap when you know it's there,
Adam says, sparing a quick glance for Nine before turning his eyes toward Six.
I don't know exactly what you'll find down there, but I can guarantee a Mogadorian presence. I can pilot the skimmer better than you. Maybe outmaneuver them if they've got ships in the air?
Well, I sure as hell wasn't going to walk to Mexico,
Six replies dryly. She looks at me.
You trust this guy, right?
I do. She shrugs.
Then welcome to Team Kalakmul, Adam.
I hear Marina suck her teeth, but she doesn't make any other protest.
Great! We're sending a Mogadorian to investigate a Lorik holy place,
Nine complains, shaking his head.
Doesn't anyone else think that's sort of disrespectful?
Didn't you just refer to it as dusty ass? Sam asks.
Statement of fact, Nine says. Just like this whole good Moog thing is still hella weird. No offense.
I silence the banter when I reach under my shirt and pull my Lorik pendant over my head. I feel an odd coldness against my heart when it's gone. I can't remember the last time I was without it. With the room suddenly gone quiet again, I hold out the pendant to Six. Take it, I say. Make sure it gets to the sanctuary.
No pressure,
Six says, smirking as she accepts the pendant. Now, I say, looking around, let's win this war and change the world.
Chapter 18. We say goodbye later that morning, all of us gathered around the skimmer on the Ashwood Estates basketball court. It feels strange to be wearing a Lorik pendant around my neck again. And I don't mean literal physical weight. The pendants themselves aren't heavy at all. They just contain all the legacies of Lorien, apparently. All the power of our nearly extinct people, imbued into a few glistening Lorillite stones. Yeah, no big deal. Is that everything? Marina asks. She's on her knees in front of her open chest, gently rearranging its contents. We've got Eight's chest as well. Its contents are forever locked up, possibly destroyed, but we figured it couldn't hurt to bring it to the sanctuary with the rest. I don't have a chest of my own, so Marina has to put all of our collected inheritance into hers. After our meeting earlier, John and Nine went through their chests and gathered together anything that wasn't a weapon, a healing stone, or otherwise combat-related. Besides the handful of Lorik gemstones yet to be traded for penthouses or computer equipment, John handed over a bundle of dried leaves tied with a yellowed piece of twine that make the sound of the wind when my fingers brush against them, and Nine gives up a pouch of soft, coffee-dark soil. Marina carefully put these items into her chest, alongside a vial of crystal-clear water, a stray piece of lorelite, and a tree branch with the bark pared away. So, because we don't know what exactly these phoenix stones are, we'll just dump anything that's close, right? I say, then hastily correct myself. I mean, not dump. Commit to the earth. What brainwashed Malcolm said. John laughs a little. If we come up with a better plan, I'll let you know. Dad's still down there watching more tapes, Sam offers. Maybe he'll find something else. Right now, winging it seems like the only option, on pretty much every front, John says. There's something else I want you to take to the sanctuary, Six. John crouches down to reach into his chest. I was wondering why he'd brought it with him to the basketball court after we already went through it inside. I understand when he holds out a small can that I immediately recognize. Henri's ashes. John, I say, not accepting the can right away. Take him, John replies gently. He belongs at the sanctuary. But don't you want to be there? To say goodbye? Of course I do. But with everything that's happening, I don't know if I'll have a chance. When I start to protest again, John cuts me off. It's okay, Six. I'll feel better knowing he's with you, headed to the sanctuary. If it's what you want, I say, accepting the ashes. I'll take care of him, I promise. I carefully place the can of Henri's ashes in Marina's chest with the rest of our stuff. We all fall silent, the mood turning somber. It's hard to have this kind of moment when you're being watched, though. The government agents keep their distance, although I can see some of them, including Walker herself, watching us from a nearby porch. You going to be all right with them? I ask John. He looks around, noting all the prying eyes. They're on our side now, remember? I have to keep reminding myself, I reply, my gaze involuntarily turning towards the skimmer. Seems like I'm doing that a lot. Adam is already on board the skimmer. along with Dust, the chimera that's bonded with him. I'm taking John at his word that we can trust the wiry Mogadorian currently running diagnostics in the cockpit. I'm not sure Marina feels the same. She hasn't said anything outright, but I can feel cold radiating from her whenever Adam's near. After everything that's happened, I can't blame her for being suspicious. I've resigned myself to a very chilly flight to Mexico. Check in often, John reminds me, tapping the phone that he's clipped to the hip of his jeans like a total dork. Both Marina and I are now in possession of satellite phones, too bulky to wear as fashion accessories, so they're stored with the rest of our supplies. The gear arrived courtesy of the U.S. government, or at least the rebel faction that Walker has ties with. Both Adam and Malcolm looked over the phones and assured us they aren't bugged. Yeah, yeah, I reply. You too, John. Stay in touch. Stay alive. And take care of all our stuff, Nine grumbles. He's standing a few paces off, watching Marina mess with her chest, his eyebrows furrowed. I want some of those gems back if possible. You know, for after. Need to buy a new place to live, thanks to my shitty house-sitter over here. I shoot Nine a look. Are you serious right now? He shrugs. What? Got a plan for the future? Marina looks up from her chest and, with a sigh, tosses Nine a pair of dark gloves. Here, I never figured out what to do with these. Sweet, Nine says and pulls them on immediately. He flexes his fingers inside the leather-like material, then violently thrusts his palms out towards John. Did you feel anything, dude? John ignores Nine, looking at Marina. Can we be sure those aren't important? What if they're a phoenix stone? They're gloves, Johnny, Nine says, not taking them off. You ever heard of an ancient ritual that involves burying a pair of stylish-ass gloves? Come on. John shakes his head, giving up. His eyes linger on Henri's ashes until Marina closes her chest. And then his gaze drifts toward the skimmer. I wish I could come with you. I'd like to be there for both of them. Eight's body is already on board the skimmer, strapped securely to one of the seats. After, Marina says, and she reaches out to squeeze John's hand. She's still walking around with a lot of sadness. We all are. But I'm slowly seeing signs that the old, gentle Marina is melting all that ice. Eight would understand. Once we've won, there will be time for us to pay our respects properly. All of us together. Nine stops screwing with his new gloves and gets serious for a moment, looking at Marina. I'd like that, he says. Ready? I ask Marina. She nods and uses her telekinesis to float her chest into the skimmer's entrance. Be safe, all of you. One by one, Marina hugs the boys, and I do the same. Sam is last for me, and when he wraps me up in a big hug, I get the same feeling that I did before when we were all assembled in the Mogadorian tunnels, that everyone is watching us and tittering about how precious we are. I bristle a little bit. But before I know it, the hug has lasted way longer than the others, and our friends have drifted a few steps away, as if to let us have a discreet moment. Six, Sam says quietly against my ear, and I pull back enough to look at him, cutting him off. Don't make this weird, Sam, I whisper, and tuck a loose strand of hair behind my ear, glancing surreptitiously toward the others. So we spent last night together. Maybe that wasn't the wisest move on my part. I love Sam, in my way, and I don't want to string him along or hurt his feelings. I'm just still not sold on having any kind of relationship until this is all over, especially with how stupid and complicated things got with John after just some flirting. But after everything that happened in Florida, I needed something good for a change. Something warm and safe and approaching normal. And that was Sam. I thought he understood that I didn't want to get into some dopey, John-Sarah-style, star-crossed lovers thing with him. But here we are, having a moment. And blunt as I'm trying to be, I'm not exactly pulling away either. "I'm not making it anything," Sam says, screwing up his face at me. I don't get why you didn't want me coming with you. "You'll do more good here, with your dad," I tell him. "And you'll need to keep John and Nine in line. The last time I went on a mission with John, he left me inside a mountain," Sam says, not buying it. "Come on, Six. What is it really?" I sigh, simultaneously wanting to strangle him and kiss him. For a second, I'm not sure which instinct will win out. I want something more with Sam, I think. Eventually. I just don't want to think about it right now. Last night was one thing, but now I'm back to fighting a war. I don't want the distraction, Sam, all right? "Oh," he says, looking like I've just murdered his pride. "You mean, like, you'd have to keep saving me from Moogs or stop me from stepping on some ancient Mayan spike trap or whatever? Because I thought we were past that. I can handle myself, Six. And I only accidentally shot you that one time in practice, and..." I kiss him. Mostly just to shut him up and illustrate my point. But also because I just can't help myself. I hear Nine make an oohing noise off to the side and make a mental note to destroy him the next chance I get. "That's the distraction I'm talking about," I say quietly, my face still close to his. Sam is blushing again, and his mouth is still working like he wants to say something more. He's probably trying to come up with some smooth way to say goodbye, but I'm sick of these drawn-out moments. So I take one last look at his sweet, dumbstruck face and turn away. A few seconds later, I'm strapped into the skimmer's seat next to Adam, ignoring the raised eyebrow and smirk Marina's fixing me with. "Shall we?" Adam asks. We nod, and Adam throws some switches, handling the skimmer's controls with much more confidence than I did. As we slowly rise up, I look out the window to see Sam and the others below, waving goodbye to us. I wonder if my life will ever be without these moments, the painful goodbyes before we all go off to risk our lives. John always talks about how much he can't wait for some boring, normal life. But would I be happy like that? We gain altitude, trees zipping by beneath us, and I think about Sam. If it wasn't for this war, the constant chaos, we'd have never even gotten together. What would it be like for us without the looming threat of Mogadorian destruction? I'd like to find out.
Chapter 19. Nine leans across me so that he can get a good look at Sam, saying to him in a stage whisper,
"All right, dude, what's the deal with you and Six?"
Sam pointedly looks out the window of the van.
"What?" "Nothing."
Nine snorts.
"Come on, man. It's like a 4-hour drive to New York. You gotta give up some details."
In front of us, in the passenger seat, Agent Walker clears her throat.
"Fascinating as I find the sex lives of teenage boys, maybe we could use this time to go over our operational parameters," she says dryly.
"Agreed," I say, shoving Nine back in his seat so he can't leer at Sam anymore. "We need to focus on the mission." Nine frowns at me.
"All right, John, I'm gonna focus my ass off for the rest of this car ride."
"Good." Sam flashes me a grateful smile and I nod. Part of me really does think we should be thinking about the impossible odds we're facing, but another part of me just doesn't want to hear any details about Sam and Six. I'm happy for them, I guess. Glad they could find some comfort together. But I can't get over the feeling that Sam is going to end up with his heart broken. I remember my vision of the future. The way Sam screamed right before the Mogadorians executed Six.
Maybe that's why I get the sinking feeling this is going to end badly.